and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite app, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, wherever. Just search for the Nick Craig Show. You can also visit and listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. A good Friday morning to you. We got a wild story this morning out of New Mexico. A former judge and his wife were raided by the FBI and arrested for allegedly housing suspected members of the Tren de Aragua Venezuelan street gang. This is a wild, wild story. So you've got a former Deanna County magistrate judge by the name of Joel Cano, C-A-N-O, and his wife Nancy were arrested yesterday in New Mexico after FBI agents raided their home over suspicion of housing suspected illegal gang members. Now, there was some indication that something funky was going on because Joel Cano resigned his post last month and the state Supreme Court permanently barred him from holding a judicial office in the state on Tuesday over allegations that they took an illegal immigrant who was also a suspected member of the Venezuelan street gang into their home. The couple is expected to be charged with evidence tampering, according to a report from Fox News, after the after a migrant whose name is Christian Ortega Lopez was arrested at their residence in February. Documents allegedly showed that Nancy Cano, his wife, hired the migrant for home repairs and offered him housing. Kristi Noem, the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, said, quote, "Under President Trump, we have arrested over 1,500 aliens, including more than 600 members of the vicious Tren de Aragua gang. If you are here illegally and break the law, we will hunt you down, arrest you, and lock you up. That's a promise." Now, there's a video of this unfolding by Fox 14, a local affiliate out of New Mexico, showing this situation unfolding. You can see, presumably that's Nancy Cano being arrested there, being taken into custody by the FBI. Presumably that's her husband, the former judge as well. Their home raided by the FBI yesterday, both of them handcuffed and being taken into custody by the FBI. What a wild situation. I mean, you've got individuals, in this case, a judge, a magistrate judge, who abruptly stepped down from his position. After what? Well, the situation unfolding where you've got them harboring individuals who are not only in the country illegally, right? That's one thing. Now, obviously, people in the country illegally, well, that's a problem, right? You broke a law. Now, the left always loves to argue about this. You've seen the clips. I played a clip a couple weeks ago from Scott Jennings on CNN, that ridiculous overnight show they run, where the host, Abby Phillips, made the claim, well, you know, they didn't commit any crimes, even though coming into the country illegally is in fact a crime. Now, the Democrats want to argue the merits over this. They want to claim, well, it's only a low-level misdemeanor, which I would argue it's not. It's undoubtedly a felony, but they want to argue it's a low-level misdemeanor, so on and so forth. The reality is, it's a crime. It is still a crime to enter the country illegally, regardless of what the situation is. We have a legal process to enter the country. We have an amnesty program that allows you to enter the country illegally, or allows you to come to the country and gain entry. For example, if you're being politically persecuted in the country in which you're coming from. Wait, there are ways for individuals who are not U.S. citizens to enter the country in an expedited fashion. We do allow that in the United States. We have allowed that in the United States. Now, unfortunately, Democrats have taken advantage of that system. Democrats have encouraged individuals to flood into the country illegally. They did it under the previous administration. They closed their eyes and plugged their ears while this was going on for the better part of, I don't even know how long, the better part of 3.5 years while this was going on. All in told, you ended up having hundreds of thousands of individuals entering the country through some sort of amnesty program where they were given some sort of temporary allowance into the country. And then on the flip side, you had hundreds of thousands of individuals who said, to hell with that, we're just going to cross the border illegally. We're going to be smuggled into the United States illegally. We're going to cross the border at a spot where there is not border patrol. where there's not a border crossing station where you would go through and go through the process of requesting some of that temporary entry into the United States for the purpose of being politically persecuted in your country, right? I mean, that's what individuals decided to do. They wanted to come to the country illegally. Now, that's their prerogative to do so. We have legal immigration laws and a legal process on the book if you want to come to America. Now, the left will argue and folks will say, oh, well, the process is broken. Illegal immigration is broken. Immigration itself, it's a broken process. That's fine. That is a fair and just opinion to have. But just because the system is allegedly broken or there needs to be reforms for the process does not give you carte blanche to ignore the laws and the processes that are on the books. And this is something that the left struggles with. They are constantly in a position where they want to warp and twist laws, warp and twist reality to justify their actions. The reality is very simple. If you come into the country illegally, you are committing a crime. If you come into the country illegally, you are breaking the law. No ifs, no ands, no buts, no, oh, they came from a tough country and they're trying to, no, none of that matters. The reality is it's illegal. You can't knowingly break the law, skirting a past border patrol, skirting past Customs and Border Protection to come into the country illegally and then roll out a sob show for me as to why it's justified. You can't do that. The same way that, you know, speeding because you were late for something doesn't give you carte blanche to speed. If you're pulled over by a cop, you're probably going to get a ticket. That's how the process works. You don't get carte blanche because you feel like you want to do something. You don't get carte blanche because it's the morally right thing to do. Oh, sorry, officer, there were no Ubers available, so I decided I was going to drive my car drunk. That's not a good justification. That's not going to get you off from getting a DWI. There's an analogy for you. Sorry, officer, the Ubers were too expensive. I didn't want to spend $40 on an Uber to get home, so I decided to drive my car drunk, putting myself and God knows how many other people on the roads in danger because of my own actions. But it's okay, because the Ubers are too expensive. I didn't have $40 to spend on an Uber or Lyft. I mean, right? I mean, that's essentially the same argument that's made about illegal immigration. Well, the laws are broken, the system's no good, so yeah, sure, we can do whatever the hell we want. No problem, no justification. So not only do you have people in the country illegally, then you've got a judge, a former magistrate judge in New Mexico, who is harboring these individuals in their home. As I noted, the two faced charges of evidence tampering amid allegations that they harbored an illegal alien who is also believed to be a member of the Venezuelan street gang Tren de Aragua. This is insane. And there's all of these exhibits that came up in the Fox News report that broke this story of the judge, his wife Nancy, and other individuals with members of this Venezuelan street gang. They sure as hell weren't hiding it. All these pictures were presumably posted somewhere on social media. So not only do you have these individuals harboring somebody who's in the country illegally, that's bad enough. Then you've got individuals who are harboring somebody illegally in the country who is a member of a dangerous Venezuelan street gang. Investigators uncovered evidence linking Ortega Lopez, the individual in question, to the gang, including gang-related clothing, tattoos, voicemails, and text messages. So this guy was, you know, communicating and having conversations with individuals that led officials to believe, oh yeah, this guy's a member of the Tren de Aragua. According to court documents, he unlawfully entered the United States on December 15th, 2023 by crossing the border near Eagle Pass, Texas, without inspection or authorization. So there is a process. You could go to Eagle Pass and attempt to come into the country. You can make your asylum claim and come into the country. That's what you're allowed to do. He didn't do that. This guy crossed the border illegally. You have the ability to make an asylum claim. This guy chose not to do that. He chose to come in illegally. He was released on December the 18th pending removal proceedings due to overcrowding at a Border Patrol facility. He was issued a notice to appear, initiating formal removal proceedings under the Immigration and Nationalities Act. Further investigation led to the seizure of four firearms from the residence of April Cano, the couple's daughter. Ortega Lopez was found in social media posts posing with weapons, some of which were claimed to have been owned by April, their daughter. He is currently facing federal charges for being an illegal alien in possession of a firearm in violation of 18 U.S.C. G922-5. If convicted, he faces up to 15 years in prison. So, in the country illegally, there's one. A member of a Venezuelan street gang, two. Posing with and having possession of firearms in the country in which he is not legally supposed to be in. There's three. Now, any one of those three is enough. But you've got three compounding situations right there as to what's wrong with this story. And you've got a magistrate judge, somebody who went to law school, passed the bar in the state of New Mexico, which I can only imagine, like many other states, is a rigorous exam to get your law license. Undoubtedly knows the difference between right and wrong. Undoubtedly knows the difference as to what is lawful and what is not. That is part of, I can only assume that is an integral part of your job as a magistrate judge, to know when something is legally proper and when it's not. Harboring a Venezuelan street gang member in his house illegally. Harboring an illegal alien. Insane. Former ICE field director John Fibonacci told WMPI News, Donna Ana County has been a hotbed of illegal immigration and drug trafficking, as well as human smuggling, for many, many years. To see that a judge would allow this to happen is very concerning. It's incredibly concerning. What else has this judge been doing? As I mentioned, Judge Cano resigned from his judicial position in March, and on Tuesday, the New Mexico Supreme Court issued a ruling permanently barring him from holding any judicial office in the state. The chairwoman of the Republican Party of New Mexico said, quote, "The people of New Mexico are tired of a system where the powerful don't play by their own rules. We demand real accountability for Judge Cano's connection to a gang-affiliated criminal and full transparency on how our judiciary is being held to the same laws as the rest of us. Enough is enough." What a wild situation. But when you've got judges that are partaking in this action, it's wild. When you've got individuals that are held to an incredibly high standard, like a judge, like somebody who is determining very serious things for other people as a magistrate judge, when those individuals believe that they are above the law, that's all I can assume here, right? You believe you're above the law. It's the only justification. You believe that the rule of law is for everybody else but yourself. There's no other justification as to why you would illegally harbor somebody, especially a dangerous member of a Venezuelan street gang, in your house. I think that's a fair assumption to make. I think that's a fair and just assumption to make about this individual. But that's what he did. He got caught, obviously, resigned his position, debarred, and now he's in jail. And now he's going to be charged by the FBI. I mean, you have to seriously wonder what goes through these individuals' minds when this stuff is playing out. Now, to kind of draw a parallel and connection here, we've had a lot of discussion and conversation over the last couple of months over the judicial process and the judicial system having serious issues as it relates to politics. You've heard me talk about it ad nauseum. The questions as to whether individuals that are in positions like a magistrate judge, a district judge, whatever the judicial bench may be, that when they are in a position of authority, in a position of power like they are, what happens when their own personal political opinions start, I guess, encroaching on their ability to do their job. But that's been a valid question that's been asked as it relates to seemingly every single executive order from the Trump administration being slapped down in the courts. Seemingly every single decision by Trump, executive authority, executive orders coming out of the Oval Office are being slapped down by U.S. district judges from who the hell knows where, right? People that represent a relatively geographically small district determining that the president can or cannot do something as it relates to immigration law, for example. So what do you do when you've got these judges that are acting in a completely inappropriate manner like this judge was? Now, I don't know exactly what how his rulings on the bench were as a magistrate judge, but I think it's a fair assumption to draw and probably something that's going to be investigated and presumably was investigated by the New Mexico Bar Association, determining that this individual is not capable of making those decisions on the bench. That's why he was disbarred. You're not just disbarred for no reason. You're disbarred when it's determined and it's obvious that you're incapable of doing your job and holding yourself to the standard that you're required to as somebody who holds authorization from your state bar or whatever, however many states you've gone through and passed the bar exam in, whatever states you're allowed to practice law in legally. So what happens when your own political preferences start rising to the level that you can no longer do your job? It seems like that's the case here with Judge Kano, the magistrate judge out of New Mexico. His own personal political opinions, who I'm sure he believes that the immigration system is broken. Based on this story, I'm sure he has an incredible amount of disdain and hatred for President Donald Trump, for Kristi Noem, for anybody else that's in the administration that is trying to allow the United States to get back to a position where we, maybe follow immigration law that's on the books. Maybe hold individuals accountable to laws that they have broken, secure our border, use immigration law as it's supposed to be used, enforcing laws that are on the books. I'm sure Judge Kano's not a fan of that at all. I'm sure he despises the Trump administration, despises Republicans. And there's some evidence proving that. As I was going through this Fox News article, there was some evidence that Judge Kano was set to had spent some time within some big time Democrat circles in New Mexico, which is a blue, very, very blue, hyper blue state. So it would seem that he, of course, was very much affiliated with the Democrat Party and would exactly explain this kind of situation. This is a good example of individuals being held responsible and accountable for their actions, as they should be. We live in a society in which we have the rule of law. We live in a society in which laws are on the books, whether they're federal laws or state laws, that need to be followed. There's this weird thing from the left that they want to gaslight you into believing that certain laws just don't need to be followed. Certain laws are unjust and unfair. And while that may in fact be true, I mean, there's plenty of stupid laws that exist throughout the country. Plenty of stupid laws that exist in North Carolina. But just because they're stupid, just because you disagree with them, does not give you the authority, does not give you the right, does not give you any sort of legal protection to ignore them. Does not give you the right to say, I don't agree with this law, so I'm not going to follow it. You and I can't operate in that manner. If you choose to just rampantly break the law constantly, you are eventually going to be charged, arrested, charged, and held accountable for it. But for whatever reason on the left, they seem to believe that a lawless society is what they want to push towards. They want to push towards a society in which, to hell with whatever's on the books, to hell with whatever laws are drafted and written, we want to do what's morally right. What we determine is morally right, right? Because our moral code on the left is far superior to anybody else's. We're the party of women. We're the party of immigrants. We're the party of caring for individuals. That's what the left constantly proclaims themselves to be. And so anything that is abject to this moral code that the left has, right, they believe it is okay to admonish those laws, to ignore those laws, and in some cases, just break them because we don't like them. We believe that it's okay for individuals to come into the country illegally. We believe it's unjust for individuals to have to follow immigration law that's on the books to come into the United States of America. That's what the left believes. Not only do they believe it, they're willing to put it into action. They're willing to ignore individuals breaking the law. They're willing to ignore the facts of any situation because they believe they're on some moral high ground, some moral high road, and can justify their actions that way. The fact of the matter is, that's not how it works. Right? Your feelings, your opinion, your thoughts, and your prayers, and all of this other crap that you hear from the left constantly really doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is very simple. There are laws on the books. They need to be followed. If they're not followed, you will be held accountable. And that's exactly the quote that you just heard me read a couple of minutes ago from Kristi Noem. If you're in the country illegally, if you're in the country and you're not supposed to be, you will be arrested. Her quote, if you are here illegally and break the law, we will hunt you down, arrest you, and lock you up. That's a promise. Now, the left sees that as, first of all, they see it as racist because, of course, that's, you know, a go-to for the Democrat Party. Anything that comes out from Republicans is inherently based in race. That's how the left operates. So they see it as racist and they see it as disgusting and despicable. Can you believe that the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security is telling people that if they're here illegally and break the law, that they're going to be hunted down and arrested? Can you believe that? How despicable of an act from Kristi Noem. That's what these people think. They're insane. Now, I will give this family, the Cano family, credit. You know, there's often the discussion, oh, well, hey, if you're in favor of illegal immigration, invite these people into your house. In the case of Judge Cano and his wife, Nancy, I guess they live by that rule. They, in fact, did. Turns out that's also illegal. Turns out harboring somebody who's wanted in the country is also illegal. Surprise, surprise. You would assume that a judge would know that in New Mexico, but I guess not. So we'll see what comes of this story. We'll continue to track it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Turning our attention to the state of Florida this morning, the Senate minority leader in Florida. Now, the state of Florida is controlled by Republicans. It's funny, a state that for the longest time has been, right, the swing state. Right? You go back to Bush v. Gore in the year 2000, and you go through the 2008, and even the 2012 election, a lot riding on the state of Florida. Right? It was one of the major swing states across the country. Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, major swing states. But Florida, and it's not too dissimilar in Ohio as well, Florida is no longer a swing state. Florida is a solid red state. A lot of that is to the great success of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has really taken that state by control, has really done a phenomenal job rolling out, I believe, in a very logical and reasonable sense, the conservative agenda, the conservative ideology, and has rallied the Republicans, rallied the Republican Party and Republicans throughout the state of Florida. He's done a masterful job at doing that. Florida is really the shining example of success for Republicans. Now, of course, it's not perfect. I've got some friends in Florida, and I, you know, get updates every once in a while this is going on. It's never going to be perfect. But you look at the, you know, midterm elections that happened in 2022, rough election for Republicans. What was supposed to be a red wave didn't manifest at all. But there were really two states that had good, successful elections for Republicans. It was North Carolina and Florida. Florida had a banner year in 2022. North Carolina, pretty good year as well. And so you've got a state that is very squarely controlled by Republicans in the state of Florida. So this unfolded yesterday on the floor of the Florida Senate with the minority leaders. This would, of course, be the Democrat Party, the minority leader having this to say in front of his fellow colleagues. Take a listen.
Whom I'm finding may not want it. There'll be a caucus meeting later this afternoon where I hope that the members of the Democratic caucus will elect a new leader. For today, I FedExed my voter registration form to change my party affiliation to no party affiliation. Joe Scott should receive that by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning in Broward County. And here's why. Our constituents are craving practical leaders, not political hacks. We are entrusted to be guided by our conscience. And while I suppose it's easier in theory than it is in application, even my worst detractors have no valid claim that I can be bullied, that I can be bought, or even borrowed for a special interest. I am my father's son, even in his death. I am my mother's son while she is still alive. I will not miss another one of her birthdays, and I will return to who I was when I became a young man, independent. Independent in thought, in my passion, and my conscience, not consultants.
Pretty wild comments there as Jason Pizzio, a Florida State Democrat minority leader. Right, this guy was the leader of the Democrat Party in the North Carolina, in the Florida Senate, excuse me. Right, the highest level that it goes for the party that is not in the majority, the minority party, announcing yesterday on the floor that he has FedExed his voter registration. He's not becoming a Republican, but he has changed his affiliation to no party affiliation. And I guess it makes sense, right? Because what one of the interesting things that you're trying to see, or that I believe you're starting to see, is that Democrats, more moderate, sane, competent Democrats, are finding themselves ever more frustrated with their own party. They are finding themselves ever frustrated with the individuals that they have to surround themselves with. And, you know, just as an example, this happened on the Florida House floor. Now, of course, the video I just played for you was in the Senate, but this happened on the House floor yesterday afternoon in Florida as well. This is a fellow Democrat in the state of Florida in their general assembly or assembly, whatever they call it down in Florida.
And for me, this bill is not about protecting children. It's about exerting additional control over what our kids are allowed to read and are allowed to learn.
It's only going to cause more in the courts, more money it's going to cost us. Please vote down on this bill.
Voting no on HB 1539 is not a vote for inappropriate content. It's a vote against broad overreach and censorship that undermines educators, restricts students' intellectual development, and diminishes the quality of public education in Florida.
Now, the bill, as you hear Democrats yelling and screaming about it, was attempting to take pornography out of books in classrooms. And you've got, of course, Democrats, very similar here in North Carolina, that seem to think that's okay to have in schools. So you look at these more middle-of-the-road Democrats, which presumably Jason Pizzo is in Florida. He finds himself fed up with his party, and he's deciding to leave. I mean, we saw a similar situation unfold in North Carolina back a couple of years ago with Tricia Cotham, who gave Democrats the extra vote that they needed to not become the, not have a supermajority in the North Carolina Senate. Or in the North Carolina House, excuse me, Tricia Cotham out of Mecklenburg County. Democrats bullied her to a pulpit. And so what did she do? She changed her party affiliation, gave Republicans the supermajority, and they were able to override something like 40 Governor Roy Cooper vetoes over the last two legislative sessions. It's insane. Right? Democrats bully their own members into leaving their party. Democrats, I believe, are truly lost right now. And I've got a very interesting story on that coming up as it relates to the DNC. Some controversy brewing there as well. All of this really kind of sticking together this morning. I want to remind you that if you are interested in getting access to a daily show notes and more, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. Each and every weekday morning, you'll see a new post pop up there that's got all of the links, all of the videos, all of the posts from the show that has just taken place. All of that is available, plus access to our monthly hangout. That will be happening coming up for you next Wednesday, 7 o'clock on Zoom, April the 30th. We'll be chatting the latest political news and more. That is available exclusively to our Patreon subscribers over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Appreciate everybody that has come on board and supported the show over the last couple of months. We'll talk about some controversy brewing in the DNC coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Some interesting situations unfolding in the Democrat Party this morning as the chair of the DNC is pushing back on Vice Chair David Hogg. He's one of he is now the Vice Chair of the Democrat Party. If you're not familiar with David Hogg and looking back at a little bit of his history, he was one of the students that was part of Stoneman Douglas High School, the shooting that happened there. When was that, 2017 or something like that? He has since risen to popularity within the Democrat Party. He is, I think he's probably 25, 26 years old. He is now the vice chair of the DNC. And with that, he is pushing to unseat incumbent Democrats. Now, I don't know how the Democrat Party handles their business. I can't speak to that. I've never been involved in Democrat politics enough to know exactly what's going on within the internal party structure of the Democrat Party. But when you have the vice chair of, this is the DNC, like not a local, not a state Democrat Party, but the DNC as a whole. You have the RNC, the Republican National Committee, and the DNC, the Democrat National Committee. When you've got the vice chair of the DNC talking about unseating elected Democrats, that is a huge foul. That is a major problem. Now, you can agree or disagree with the candidates. I'm sure, just like in the Republican Party, there are members of the Democrat Party that are unhappy with certain candidates. They believe they're not far left enough. They don't push enough of Democrat ideals and ideologies, and they want them out. And that's a fair discussion, the same way that it is on the Republican side of the aisle. But as the vice chair of the DNC, you can't be going out and making those claims publicly. You can't threaten to unseat members of your own party as the vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. You just can't do that. So it was announced that David Hogg and others were announcing their intention to primary Democrats that are currently sitting in elected office. After Hogg, David Hogg came out as a leading proponent of this push, the head of the DNC was critical, saying that the DNC needed to be a referee and remain neutral on its primary contestants, very similar to the RNC. That is a standard party principle. The head of the DNC said, quote, "Let me be unequivocal. No DNC officer should ever attempt to influence the outcome of a primary election, whether on behalf of an incumbent or a challenger. If you want to challenge incumbents, you're more than free to do that, but just not as an officer of the DNC, because it is our job to be neutral arbitrators. We can't be both the referee and also a player at the same time." Now, I don't agree with the DNC. I don't agree with their party platform. I don't agree with 99% of the things that the DNC proclaims and stands for. But in this case, the head of the Democrat National Committee, Ken Martin, is 100% right. You as a party official are at a higher level than, you're no longer just a regular Democrat. You're no longer just some random guy with a D next to your name. You are the vice chair of the Democrat National Committee. You have a higher obligation, a higher authority than other individuals within your own party. And you need to live up to that. And I know folks may not like hearing that, but that's the goal and the objective of the RNC and the DNC. The parties do not get involved in primaries. They just don't. And I know that's frustrating for a lot of folks, but they don't get involved in primaries because it's not appropriate. It's unbelievably inappropriate for a political party of that magnitude to be involved in the primary process. You talk about putting your thumb on the scale, that's that. And while it might be beneficial for you to do so, it's inappropriate to have for you to do it. And, you know, while you might be in favor of it when it helps candidates that you're in supportive of, you would, of course, not be in favor of it if it helped candidates that you were against. For example, here in North Carolina, there's a lot of people that are very frustrated with Senator Tom Tillis. If you had the North Carolina Republican Party coming out and putting their thumb on the scale for Tillis, many folks would be very frustrated, and justifiably. The same way that you would be frustrated if the Democrat Party or the Republican Party was putting their thumb on the scale for candidates that you support or didn't support, right? You might be in favor of it when it's helping you, but you would absolutely be against it when it's hurting you. And that's the problem. David Hogg took the opposite stance on an X thread on Thursday, defending his push to primary candidates, saying that he could remain affiliated with the DNC in his official capacity while also working against Democrat incumbents that progressives perceive as weak. David Hogg said, quote, "This moment requires us to have the strongest opposition party possible to stop President Donald Trump and to provide real alternatives to the Republican Party for voters that we simply do not have right now. And we're seeing law firms, tech companies, and so many others bowing to Trump. We all must use whatever position of power we have to fight back. That's exactly what I'm doing." So David Hogg, at his ripe age of 25 years old, obviously doesn't understand how party politics work at all. I would argue he's completely unqualified to be the vice chair of the DNC, but voters at the Democrat National Convention voted him in and chose that they wanted David Hogg to be their vice chair. That was their right. That was their authority. But this guy is unable to separate being an activist from being the vice chair of a major organization, an organization that pulls in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. An organization that has a moral, ethical, and I would argue in some cases, based on their plan of organization or some sort of governing documents, the absolute ability to stay neutral, at least publicly, on some of these races. You just can't do that. Now, David Hogg says he isn't breaking any rules by targeting certain a Democrat incumbents for replacement. Hogg wrote, quote, "The role of the DNC is to set the presidential primary calendar, set the presidential debate schedule, and help strengthen our state parties, play a key role in building our data infrastructure for the party, and to be the campaign in waiting for whoever the next Democrat nominee is. Nothing I'm doing is at odds with any of that." Leaders of We Deserve announced their push earlier this month, indicating that they were seeking change in the status quo within the Democrat Party. A page dedicated to the topic reads, quote, "Too many elected leaders in the Democrat Party are either unwilling or unable to meet the moment and are asleep at the wheel while Trump is demolishing the economy, challenging the founding of our democracy," not a democracy, by the way, "and creating new existential crises for our country day by day." The group said Washington has an incumbent favoring culture. Now, that's true. There is an incumbent favoring culture in Washington, D.C. There's also one in every other state and every elected official across the country. Right? When you are an incumbent, you have a leg up. There's no question about it. You're already in the job. You already have the connections. It's easier to fundraise. There's no question about that. But there's, wait, what do you do? Well, what's the, I hear this all the time. Oh, you're never going to beat an incumbent. But there's some truth to that, sure. But it's not always the case. There are benefits of being the incumbent. There are benefits of winning an election. Part of that is getting reelected is easier. And I don't know of any magic wand that you can wave that solves that problem. There are just benefits and advantages of winning an election, being a public official. The group said, quote, "Today's party politics has an unwritten rule. If you win a seat, it's yours for life. No one serious in your party will challenge you. That's a culture that we have to break." Well, that's not true. And your seat for life, I mean, that's an opinion. But that doesn't stop anybody from seriously challenging you. The reason that somebody serious doesn't challenge an incumbent is because it's very hard to win. You have to raise a lot of money, spend a lot of time, and you are facing an uphill battle. Now, you can say that that's wrong. You can say that you don't like that, and all of that is fine. But it's just the simple fact of being an elected official. It's the simple fact of winning an election and being an incumbent. Incumbents lose. It happens all the time. Most of the time incumbents don't lose, it's because there's not a serious candidate. People don't want to run against an incumbent because it's a tough race and you are likely to lose. That's why they don't do it. It's a huge waste of time, huge waste of money, and huge waste of effort if you truly can't win. Now, you'll argue, well, you don't know you can't win till you run. That's fine. But there are certain economic barriers and realistic barriers that make it very hard to unseat an incumbent. No question about that. So this organization is seeking to replace long-serving incumbents with new, younger Democrats, and apparently have already raised $20 million to do so. The group said in a statement, younger leaders, simply bring a different level of urgency that we just aren't seeing in our politics right now. Referencing young Democrats' perception of urgency on issues like climate change. Oh, thank God. Yeah, got to get young Democrats in there to stop the world from spontaneously combusting. They say our politicians have failed to make democracy work for people and instead make it work for special interests, destroying our future. It's not alarmist at all. The escalating feud fits into a larger identity crisis for the Democrat Party in the wake of Trump's 2024 sweeping electoral victory when he took all seven swing states and won the popular vote. Since then, Democrats have been scrambling to articulate their platform and stances amid Trump's much more aggressive second term. Meanwhile, younger progressive Democrats, including figures like Hogg and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have increasingly sought to assert a presence over the party. At the end of the 117th Congress, mounting pressure from younger Democrats led three longtime House speakers, Nancy Pelosi, Majority Leader Sten Hoyer, and Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, all whom of which were there for a long time, to step down, making way for a new House Minority Leader in Hakeem Jeffries and other Democrats. Right, so this goes on to this broader message of a party that is in disrepair right now. A party that is struggling big time to figure out their identity. That's, well, the Democrat Party. They ran an entire election in 2024. Well, first, it started with propping up a guy who was mentally not capable of dealing with the presidency. That was, of course, Joe Biden running against Donald Trump. Once they realized that Biden didn't have the mental acuity, didn't have the mental ability to deal with running for president, they subbed him out last minute with the vice president, cackling Kamala Harris. She got into the race, ran a 9-week campaign, got her ass handed to her in November. Democrats lost the majority in the Senate by way more than they were supposed to, were unable to gain a majority in the House, and now you look at Washington, D.C., and you see Republicans in control of everything. They've got the Oval Office, they've got the House, they've got the Senate. There's really nobody to blame but themselves. There's nobody to point the finger at but Democrats. They ran a terrible candidate. They ran on issues that were broadly unpopular for the vast majority of the American people. They tried running on men and women's sports. That was a winning issue for the left, at least they thought it was, even though that's an 80-20 political issue, of which the Democrats are in the 20%. They wanted to run a campaign on culture war issues. They wanted to bring up a whole bunch of culture war nonsense and garbage. Meanwhile, Americans spent 4 years struggling economically under Joe Biden. Americans spent 4 years dealing with the plague of illegal immigration in our country, dealing with rampant drugs pouring across our U.S.-Mexico border, and a party that wanted to do nothing with it. A party that wanted to sit on their hands, whistle, and hope that the problem would solve itself magically. Like one day they were just going to wake up and nobody would care about illegal immigration. One day they would just wake up and not care that hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of fentanyl and other illicit drugs were flowing across the our U.S.-Mexico southern border. I guess they just, if they ignored it long enough, it would just disappear. That didn't happen. The American voters sent a very strong message in November of last year that they were not in favor of and fed up with the Democrat Party, their ideas, and their policies. And I've made this point a lot, and I'll continue to make it. Their ideas currently suck. The Democrat Party's ideas are garbage. And it's evident based on the election. What is the tell me what the Democrat Party stands for. Mud democracy? I mean, that's it. My democracy. We got to stand for my democracy. My democracy this. My democracy that. That's all they can talk about. I mean, you even heard it in the stupid tweet from David Hogg. Trump is rooting out American democracy. We're not a democracy. We're a democratic republic. If you're going to yell about an existential threat to the United States political system, at least know what we are. But that's all they've got. To yell and scream and bitch and complain about democracy. Doesn't mean anything. It's not a policy platform. That's not an issue-based campaign. Donald Trump being a Nazi is not a campaign policy. Donald Trump being a racist is not something that you can win an election on. Hillary Clinton tried that in 2016. I mean, you guys don't have to go that far back in history to see examples of this not working. But for whatever reason, calling half of America deplorable and claiming that half of America are bigots and racists is not a very successful way to win an election. That's news to me. I'm shocked that calling hundreds of millions of Americans racist and stupid is not a successful way to win their vote. But that's what the Democrat Party's done. That's their big policy. Donald Trump is a racist. People that vote for him are racists and stupid. Vote for us. Why? What are your ideas? What are your platforms? What are your policies? And the answer is they don't exist. The only thing that the Democrats can yell and scream about, the only thing that they have anything that is a winning issue is abortion. That's it. That's the only thing that they're able to use successfully in elections is abortion. That's it. Literally, that's it. All of their other wacky issues don't matter to the American people, or they don't rise to a high enough level that it's the most important issue driving people to a ballot box. Folks, elections are, while they are very complicated, when you boil it down, they're very simple. It's a simple math equation as to who can turn out more voters. What issues will turn people out to vote in November? That is what an election is. Now, yes, there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot of number crunching, a lot of data analytics, a lot of math and things that go into figuring that out. But when the rubber meets the road, it's how can more of my people turn out than yours? That's an election. I need more people to vote for me than vote for you. That's it. And how are the Democrats capable of doing that when they don't have any issues? When you poll voters and you ask them what their top issues were, as you know, as were done with dozens of polls leading up to the November election, you found that the issues were the economy / inflation. Some polls had those together. Some polls differentiated them. So the economy / inflation, jobs and crime. With crime being normally crime / illegal immigration, or sometimes it was separated. Those are the big issues. And so tell me where the Democrats stood on any of those issues. They had 4 years to run the economy. They had 4 years to deal with inflation. They didn't. Inflation peaked at 9.5% in the middle of Joe Biden's presidency. Prices were skyrocketing under his watch. Hundreds of thousands, millions of individuals were streaming across our border under Joe Biden's watch, committing heinous, violent acts of crime in cities across America. Those are your two big issues. And what were the Democrats' policies on that? Who the hell knows? I don't have any clue. Oh, they could talk a big game about immigration. They could talk a big game about the economy. They were in charge for 4 years and didn't do anything about it. For the first 2 years of Biden's administration, he had absolute control. The 2022 midterms were a freaking disaster for the Republicans. An unmitigated disaster. They were unsuccessful in securing the House and the Senate. It was a mess for Republicans. No red wave. Didn't happen. So Joe Biden had control. He was able to run the country in the way in which he wanted. Democrats had the ability to run the nation the way that they wanted. They did. They ran it straight into the ground and then go, huh, how did we lose? Why didn't we win? Why did Trump, for the first time in over 20 years, win the popular vote as a Republican? I wonder why, guys. I wonder why. I don't know what's going to happen with the Democrat Party over the next, I don't know, call it 12 months or so. I mean, they've got a very short runway here to reimagine themselves. They've got a very short runway to figure out what they need to focus on, what they need to really, really harpen in on and run with for the midterms in 2026. If Democrats are incapable of winning either the House or the Senate in 26, they are screwed. I mean, you think the first 2 years of Trump are going to be bad? Wait till the last 2 years of Trump, when he is on his way out the door and Republicans still hold a majority in the House and the Senate. Now, Democrats scream about how everything is being dismantled right now. It ain't going to be a fun 2 years for you guys then, I can promise you that. So I don't know what the solution is here. I don't know what the Democrats do to try and reimagine themselves. They've got idiots like David Hogg as the vice chair of the Democrat National Committee calling the shots and running the show. This guy obviously doesn't know anything about what's going on at all. It's a mess. You've got power struggles in the Democrat Party that are going on. It's a disaster right now. I'm all here for the show. I'm eating my popcorn and watching as it unfolds. But boy, if I was a, you know, more maybe not middle of the road Democrat, but leaning a little bit more to the progressive side of the aisle, not a crazy out of control liberal, but like a more moderate out of control liberal, I'd be mortified with what I was watching right now. I would be so pissed off watching what I'm watching out of my own party. Because to David Hogg's credit, he's right that voters want the Democrat Party to be the opposition to the big, bad, mean orange man and all of those awful, terrible Republicans that are in Washington, D.C. And the Democrat Party's not doing that right now. They're eating themselves alive. There's a ridiculous amount of infighting that's going on. And they have no ideas. They have no policies and they have no platforms that are popular with the American people. So if I'm a Democrat, I'm pissed. Because my party is fumbling the ball right now when they can set themselves up for a very successful midterm election. It is not very hard to have a successful midterm as the opposition party. People always want change. People always think things can be done better. That's why midterm elections are so hard for the party that is in control of the White House. It's always been the case. You go back and look at history as long as politics, modern politics, has been going on. And it's always hard for the party in power to be successful in a midterm. That doesn't mean it doesn't ever happen. But for the most part, the opposition party has a successful midterm. I don't know if that's going to happen with Democrats. I don't know if all the yelling and screaming and complaining about Trump is going to be enough to carry them across the finish line in November of 2026. We're just going to have to wait and see, I guess. I'll throw a link to this very interesting Epoch Times article up on our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, hey, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Have a great weekend. We are back with you Monday morning, 7 a.m. live, and of course, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning.